So one night we were doing a show like a Taste of Texas, whatever, and he was on stage, and Rudy gave him the light. He got off, and there was like this, like a green room, for lack of a better term. He went back. I was back there. He went off, bro. He got all emotional on Rudy. He goes, "You gave me the light." He goes, "You gave me." He goes, "You know what the light means?" He goes, "Get what is it?" He goes, "You know what the red light means? Get the fuck off the stage. You fucking suck. That's what that means." And Rudy goes, "It was time for you to get off." And he was, dude, he got emotional, crying. He goes, "I get no respect, nowhere." And it's like, and then I said, I was trying to placate him, and he goes, "Yeah. Yeah, whatever, brother." To me, he was like, and I never saw that cat again, bro. I never see. He had an emotional breakdown. Whatever, brother. Like 5 years ago.
Wow,
dude, he started crying, and Rudy was hugging him, and he no, just mom. He had like a breakdown, bro. And I tried to like, but he told me
he was headlining.
No, he had just gone up early. I go, bro, everything's... He goes, "Yeah, right, brother." He went like that to me. You know? I was just sitting. I wasn't even on after him. So it wasn't like I bumped him. Nobody bumped him. It was just time to get off stage.
That fool bumped himself.
Yeah.
What's up, fool? Felipe Esparza. Right here. We're here at the new All Things Comedy Studio on Raleigh and Melrose, if you want to come over here and rob the place. We're right here on, and Melrose, right here on Clinton, where we're Joy Medina, Ralphie May, Sheila Rivera, Alec Raimundo, Joe Diaz used to live in one apartment, man. Talk about Pata Central. Yeah, man, so we're doing a fundraiser at All Things Comedy to raise money to get new tools and new equipment, better sound, so it won't sound like we're doing a podcast out of a CB radio. All Things Comedy is a podcast network started by Bill Burr and Al Madrigal. The money goes to help them upgrade the equipment in the studio we all use for our podcast, not just mine. It would also help us be able to video podcast soon, too. So go to tubestar.com and buy a sticker, a mug, a shirt, whatever. And that will help, or just make a donation, $5, $10, whatever you want, man. We're bringing you quality shows for nothing, goddammit.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, man, you cheap bastards. People always ask different questions, like you, bro. Like, people hit you up, bro, and they complain because they tell you, "Oh, Rodrigo, I love you on the podcast." And now you give them a little muscle, a little arm.
Like, what do they want? I can't hug
you can
them virtually.
Respond them, bro. They want you to respond and say, "Hey, man, thank you, man." They want to hear a "yeah, man" or something.
Give them a little sonnet.
Give them a little 100. Oh, this piece of shit just gave me 100. Right here messaging this bastard.
100 out of 100. Well, with that being said, I'm going to give you guys more characters now. Full sentences. With a little explanation at the exclamation mark at the end. Pow!
Give them a kiss, something, man.
A little...
People want more. Huh? They want a paragraph.
They want everything. Go eat dinner at their house. It's like, dick. What if the house has roaches?
Dog? Yeah, we did a show. We did a show at Tommy T's, and one of the fans there, they wanted to be like a, I don't know what they call that, like huéspedes in Spanish.
Inquilinos.
They wanted to be like a foster home for the comedians. Like, "No, Tommy T's, don't rent that cheap condo. Just have people stay at our house." How crazy would that be, man?
Dude, I don't even
come on, bro. Get like up. That. I gotta do radio, dog.
I got morning wood, bro. Don't point that thing.
Tell your wife to make me a quesadilla, bro.
Ass beatings and
Yeah, bro, I had a callback this week, man. First callback all year. Hell yeah. Weak ass pound, but it's all good. It's funny, man. You get somebody the high five and they give you a fist. It's like, we're not ready for a handshake or something. Or, man, sometimes you give people a high five and it's a weak high five. Like, you almost bend their fingers back.
The dead hand one?
The dead hand one, yeah.
I had a fused arm.
That's a high five you give one of your brothers at church. Yeah, whatever.
I didn't think
I didn't think you were going to be here with my mom. Yeah, man. What were we talking about?
Damn, I'm stoned. No, I'm not.
Oh, yeah. We were at Tommy T's. We were at Tommy T's last week with Tommy T. Birdman showed up. Oh, my God. We got a crazy story about Birdman's friend. Birdman's friend showed up, okay? He's a guy that, man, he looked like W.C. Fields, the Mexican version. Like, he had the tightest derby hat I have ever seen on a human being. He looked like Clemenza in part of Godfather 2.
He kind
of
had that head like the sloth from Goonies, though, too, dog, and the little ears.
Yeah, so we're having a good time, and this guy starts talking, and he tells us, hey, we ask him, where you from, man? I'm from Oklahoma, like this Mexican guy, a small town in Oklahoma. I've never heard of the town. And he tells me, like, he's buzzed too, man. And he starts, and he has to be Birdman with these type of stories. This guy said that his last name is De Leon. I don't know his first name. And he's from Oklahoma. And he said that his little brother's friends knew their last name was De Leon. And they were a crazy family because I guess one of the cousins was a bank robber. And
It
came out in the paper, the De Leon family of Oklahoma. So he said that these white kids started a band and they called it Kings of Leon.
In response to their name, bullshit.
Are you serious? Like, we were just like listening to him. Like, nobody said you're bullshitting. Because we were just dumbfounded with that story, man. And I knew he was full of shit when he told Birdman to drive his Beamer home.
With no license. On
no
parole.
License. Yeah, but he said, yeah, man, these fucking widows, they took our name, Holmes, and they made a fucking band, Holmes, and they called it the Kings of Leons. But we're the Leons.
I haven't heard such a bullshit story ever, dog. Never on an interview have they said that shit.
It's probably true, bro. He has no proof. Remember you asked him, so what did you tell them?
He's all, hey, you guys took it from us. You guys took it from our name. Ha, I'm going to sue you. Click. And you hang up on him, dude. What the fuck, dude? Oh, my.
Kings of Leon was started by a Mexican family in Oklahoma called Los De Leon.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, man. So what's up, fool, man? You getting ready for the wedding, dog, or what the?
This fool. Hell yeah, dude.
Getting a bachelor party ready, man? Because I thought we've been, Armando Cosillo been talking about it. Yeah, man. You got to have a bachelor party.
Yeah, man. Have fun with lollipops, eh?
Hey, Armando had fun, huh? Tell me, T.
Shit, that fool didn't want to go home, man. Hey, you don't think we can go back, eh?
He goes, let's take the one home.
The long way home.
Yeah, man. Tommy T was there, man. The whole family was there. His son. It's funny when Tommy T asked his son right in front of me, hey, Felipe, you think my son is ready to take on the reins of this comedy club? And, like, I said, I don't know, man.
Left it hanging on.
I don't know.
But he had that face like he was ready, huh?
I don't think Tommy's going to let go of Tommy T's, man. How can you let go of your baby?
Hell no.
And then, like, he had this big old thug working there now.
Dude.
Man, there was a lot of cholos, huh?
That fool looked like he showed up with the King of Leon, dog.
Then Chris Thorne was going to get killed at the Sunday show.
You want some fitness, bro?
Chris Thorne is the host, and he's doing this joke about, where's all the Giants fans? Then all of a sudden, Giants suck! Like, dude, they just won the World Series, bro. Let it sink in for a minute. You know, I'm a Dodger fan, but I would never say the Giants suck, especially in the Bay Area.
Oh, right there, 20 minutes from the stadium.
And this fat chick kept heckling him, like, you suck. The A's suck. Your whole family suck. Your whole act sucks. And then he told the girl, you should try some fitness. And then she goes, what? Fitness dick in your mouth. And everybody laughed, man. But, man, it went downhill after that.
The son and the dad, huh? Wanted to beat him up.
And I didn't watch this happen, like, the whole thing go down. So he's telling me backstage. So I'm thinking, okay, so the crowd is crazy. So I went over there thinking that the crowd is pissed off at him. And they weren't really pissed off at him. I went in there, like, all late. Are you guys mad at something? But they were not mad at anything.
Nah, they were cool, dude. I think it just got blown out of proportion because the little guy thought he was going to get fucking swung on, dog.
And then Tommy T tells those guys, yeah, it was all his fault.
Now, come back in here and buy some drinks.
Yeah. Yeah, they were scared. They were mad, man. There was a lot of Indian people at the show.
A grip, like sings.
We saw this girl heckling me. Well, she didn't heckle, but she was just loud. And I thought she was like a Mexican dark chick married to a Mexican dark guy, but nah, she was an Indian chick. Priya Lopez.
No, she was just. She told me she was super excited to see you in person. That's why.
Oh, yeah. All right.
All excited, eh?
She was all excited, eh? She showed up in a curry. All right, people. All right, people. Little plugs real quick. Next week, I'll be in Florida, Fort Myers, Off the Hook Comedy Club, the place where people go there to eat fish and not watch comedy. Nah, man. They have lobsters. They have all kinds of fish there. It's a good place to go. It's new. It just opened. December 19, I'll be at Honolulu. Doing a good show there, Honolulu. I'll just be there with an opener guy from Honolulu, and I'll be there in Honolulu December 19 on my brother's birthday. December 26th to 31st, I'll be in Reno, Nevada at the Pioneer Underground. Go to FelipeSWorld.com for all the tickets information. Unless I remember other things to talk about, I'm going to be on the Platanito show again, the Spanish show where that pays in cash. And hopefully they won't drop something stupid on me like a pack of wolves or rats or fungus on me.
Didn't they throw scorpions on you
last
time?
They threw scorpions on my head, dude. Yeah. They threw scorpions on my head. And tomorrow, I think they're going to... It's funny, like, Platanito, if you guys don't watch this show, it's on Estrella TV. It's like Jay Leno if he puts on clown makeup. And he has these crazy shows, man. And, like, this is one show where these girls are getting dressed and he's walking around with a long mirror looking under, bro.
Shit, I'll be walking with a big-ass mirror, too, dog.
I know you will.
Chicks are hot, dog.
You do it now. So, yeah, man. So, that's what's going down. So, what's up, fool? Right here with Rodrigo Torres.
Chilling, dog. Getting ready to pop it off, dude.
We have a comedy friend here that we go way back, people. Our guest right now. If you guys want to go old school, man, this guy goes all the way back from my Que Locos days. Even before that, man, when he was one of the few guys that was on Culture Clash like 3 times. I know it because I used to hang around with guys. I used to get upset that he was on it so many times. And this guy had development deals and all around good guy. And I'll tell you a story, man, about this guy. I was hanging around with Willie Barcena and Gabriel Iglesias back in the days. And I remember Willie Barcena, he was pretty buzz, and he cornered Gabriel Iglesias in his house. Hey, bro, who's your favorite comedian, dog? Who you look up to? And this fool said, Carlos Oscar. Get the fuck out of here! You fucking serious, bro? I've been feeding you all day, dog.
God damn.
I give you a place, a couch to lay your head. But now, man, he said Carlos Oscar because, you know, Gabriel Iglesias is not a comedian like myself, you know? He's not a comedian like Willie Barcena. He's a comedian, man, that grew up watching sitcoms and appreciating good humor, which is why he liked Carlos Oscar, because his shows, man, don't really offend anybody unless you're a Puerto Rican mom. He's a good guy, and I remember, bro, this guy, we were on the Que Locos tour. This guy knows boxing. I remember one time he tried to punch Mike Robles, bro, he missed.
I got him.
Oh, you got him? He's fucking liars.
I got him.
They told us you missed, bro. Instigators.
Bobby Bites was all lying, huh?
Oh, liar, bro.
He didn't get me. They lied, dog.
Well, anyways, people, without further ado, very funny comedian from New York and the Valley of San Fernando, Carlos Oscar, ladies and gentlemen.
What's happening? Hey. By the way, forgive me for being late. I was binge watching Cristela, catching up, bro. So, you know, I couldn't get away, bro. I lost track of time.
I told you we're gonna drop it like
I lost track of time, bro.
Oh, he watched it on Hulu, man.
It was riveting.
He watched it on Hulu, man. So mention the Church of What's Happening again. 2 weeks free.
That Mike Robles story is funny. I showed up to host the Que Locos at the Ice House.
Right.
I showed up. And my boy, Eddie Pags, who was a professional prize fighter back in the day, was with me. But he wasn't there to, like, beat him up or nothing like that. He was just with me, just going to the show. So I say, yo, some comics had, I'm going to make it clear. Some comics had come up to say, hey, man, can you have Mike, like, pay me for the set I did back in the day? I go, yeah, I'll tell him. So, I mean, I say, hey, man, I'm just letting you know, some comics are like, and he goes, I never cheated nobody, man. I go, dude, I'm just, and so he got up in my face. I got up in his face. Then he pushed me down. So he was on top of me. I did, and this is before MMA, bro. So,
I put my Bob Fischer put in couches.
So he was on top. He was on top, right? And so he actually swung first. My hands were by my side. He swung, and I already know from when I used to box, you can't. When your hands are down, you're gonna get hit. So all you could do is drop your knees. So I bent my leg. So he didn't really hit me. And then so he fell on top of me. So he was on top of me in that. What's it called? Like. He was like, so I put my head like real close to his chest because there's no way he could hit me in the face. He could only hit the back of me. So as they were pulling him off me, I freaking stuck a nice shot in his eye. Then I kicked him right in the freaking chest, like that thump sound, thump. And then he sat there. He goes, cheap shot, cheap shot. And I was like, this is not the Marcus of Queensbury rules. We're on the street, you know? So I never talked to him after that. But no, it was actually, he's the one that... Instead, you can't get two Puerto Ricans fired up and nothing.
Well, that's
happen.
What I was going to go to. Okay, what's up? I'll kick this Puerto Rican's ass.
Yeah, so it was gonna go down. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's, you know, he's where he is and that's okay.
No, cause the way I wasn't there, man. And when I heard, I think, I don't know if it was Gabriel Iglesias, because I know he wasn't there either. And they were talking about it, and I said, yeah, no. And somebody said, yeah, Carlos Oscar tried to cheap shot that fool and missed.
Oh, my God.
And I said, shut the fuck up. Carlos Oscar talks about boxing all the time, and he can't head punch, right? But I'm glad you said it straight.
Said it straight, yeah. He actually, but he, if I didn't.
Because you do know how to box.
Yeah, if I didn't, bend my legs, he probably would have, oh, my goodness. Because I had my hands down. There's no way you can react that quick if your hands are by your side somebody's going to. You can only bend your legs. That's it. That's all you can do is duck.
That's a good move, man, to put your head on his chest. Then he can't.
Yeah, he couldn't hit my face. Because I was on the ground, you see? So I was like this. So I was pulling him away. I got up and I got a really nice shot in. And you see, if you see that episode, his eye is all puffed out. If you see that? I'm serious. I'm not making that up.
Watch this.
You got to look back.
That shit, dude.
Yeah, he was.
You were hosting.
He called me back to host it because, remember, I think he hosted it first, then I hosted it. We took turns, right? Like other people did. Then George Lopez hosted it, but then George couldn't do those, so he called me to host those. So I was just going back to, I was doing him the favor.
Right.
You know? I remember you were hosting, man, and I was doing warm-ups, $300 all day. So I was doing warm-ups, right? And then on the way, you were killing it. You did a good job hosting. You hosted your ass off, and it was a good show. And I remember on the way home, my girlfriend at the time, right, she kept saying, oh, Carlos Oscar is so funny, right? And I got tired of saying that. And I said, you know what, bitch? Just drop me off right here, man. I'm going to walk home. So I was like mad, right? Because I was telling her, you know what, bitch? I was fucking doing warm-ups all night, getting ready, getting the crowd.
He's too competitive.
Getting the crowd pumped up to get the crowd going. Did a set. And you said that guy was funny. And I said, you didn't appreciate what I did. You could have said he was funny and I was funny. You just dropped me off right here. And she dropped me off and I took off with an ugly chick with big tits. And I was crying at her boobs.
And she said to you, you know that Carlos Oscar guy? You too?
Like, come on, man. He can't even do a cheap shot.
He can't even get a clean cheap shot in, man. Those were cheap, but it was tit for tat on that one because, you know, like I said, he threw the first shot. But no, it was no big deal. But I've never had, I think I was doing a show with Willie back in the day in South Central, and somebody, I don't know what it was. You know what, it was at the Comedy Act Theater, and I think Willie wanted to go on, and some of the comics got, so it was, I came up, yo, is there a problem, yo? And it's like, Willie's like, he told me, he goes, dude, you know, like, you could have, like, it could have been a big deal. You started, I go, well, they were giving you grief, so I was. He goes, yeah, bro, but these guys are crazy. Like, he thought I stepped the boundary. Like, we could have been in some trouble doing that. But I guess I was always used to it. My dad was very violent, so I was, and my uncle. So to me, being around a real violent world never fazed me. Because my uncles were collectors for the mobs.
Okay.
So they, it was killed or be killed in a sense. Well, yeah, they were collectors. In the movies, they never show that. The Puerto Ricans are the ones collecting the money, you know. Puerto Ricans and black guys collect the money. And so.
Deliberate.
Yeah. So I always grew up around. So I never really get a little, I never get jolted in those situations.
Yeah,
so.
You always seem like a very peaceful dude when that Mike Robles thing happened. I was like, damn, this fool's throwing blows now? What's the world coming to?
The only other time I got upset was like a year ago. Or 2 years ago, we were doing some show in Arizona, and Ernie G, it was supposed to be, it was being taped.
Come on, bro.
And Ernie G was supposed to do like 10 minutes. He's hosting. So Ernie's supposed to, you know, do your 7 to 10. Let's get it popping. It's like 25 minutes in, bro. He's still on stage opening at 25. And I said, I was like losing it with him, bro, when he got off stage. And that's the only time I ever like told the comics. I was like, because if you weren't filming, I don't really care. But if it's supposed to, I go, dude, don't you know this is being filmed? Now you're going to, they got to edit that 25 minutes down to 5. I go, do you understand? You just put this whole thing in jeopardy because, you know, the smooth factor, the live factor of it.
I don't understand, bro. That's the only big old Latino with a big butt, huh? Gross.
Ernie's he's a trip, man. He's a hustler though. He's a hustler, but he's like those. They're stuck in that time frame. You know, they're still really into that Latinoism. Like, let it go, yo. Like, se acabó. Like, ese tiempo for the Latino nights, that's over, dog. You know, you go, oh, Latino night. That's done, people. It's moving on. Moving on, bro. That was important when none of us would get on stage, you know, like late 90s or whatever. But now, you know, it's a different world. And now we've just pigeonholed yourself to say, you're doing this Latino night. Now you're screwed. Because now you're like, you're only thought of as a Latino comic. And so that's why, and not that I don't do, like I did some big thing for the Latino Scientists of America. But these are all, you know, PhDs, and these are all professionals. I can see in that sense, but I just think that it's precarious to keep on pushing those nights because in the club's heads, like, well, you can do a Monday night or you can do that night. You know, it's just a fact. Look, I'm going to be real. I don't care because I've been in the game a long time. So, you know what I'm saying? But when that they named that whole thing, that refried fry, I thought that was the stupidest. I still think it's a stupid
name.
Tell them,
dog.
Me too.
Refried fry. What are you? And what are you, an idiot?
Retarded, dog.
It's stupid. And like, you're just cementing the stereotype. Thank you very much. That's all you're doing. And the fact that they don't see it is mind-boggling to me. It's they don't see that. Just be funny. Just be funny, you know? And things take time. They try to force things, you know? Like Latinos try to force some things, like with the pressing the raza. You need a show for the raza. Yo, what if the show sucks? Yo, you don't want that.
You're not ready,
you know,
bro.
You needed a Jackie Robinson to break the color barrier, not, you know, not some, you know, you need the right guy to do it. And that the timing is going to be there, I think. I think for sure the timing is really changing now. I think that especially the you know, like my daughter being 18 and stuff, that her generation, they don't really pigeonhole themselves. They don't really do that. So I think it's a better time for so-called diversity, I think. But I think we can't stand on that whole Latinoism no more.
Well, that's what you're saying as far as like the state of mind is so like 1990s, but it's like 2014.
Yeah,
fool.
I know a lot of Latino comedians that I started with that don't know nothing about the 101 North.
No.
They don't pass the 6.
How about this, bro? comics that say, they actually even put on their Facebook or their Twitter, it's a white crowd, wish me luck.
Like,
what are you talking about? You know, it's like, are you a comic or not? Wish me luck.
They're gonna kill me, dog.
It's true, though.
Or they do a Latino night, and it's the same comedians every week.
Yeah. Well, that happens. I mean, when I started out, it was the same comedians. It was me, Willie, Jeff Garcia, Rudy Moreno, Gilbert Escobar.
Luke Torres.
Luke had a lot of... Yo, Luke, when I look at him, bro, that dude had heat on him when he was coming up, bro.
Didn't say that he's the one that had Mencia,
Yeah, because Luke, good-looking cat... I mean, he could sing, he could play the piano, so he was, and he could do impersonations like you do, and I'm a friend of Luke, so he wouldn't mind me saying this, if it wasn't for this, really horrible divorce, that's kind of what derailed his momentum. Otherwise, really, man, he was on fire, bro.
He said that he had fools shaking in his boots.
Yeah, because he could act.
There's a quick little story. Supposedly, when Richard Pryor was coming back doing stand-up, he did stand-up one night. He blew it up at the Comedy Store, and Richard Pryor went on. He couldn't follow. And then the next day, he seen him across the street at what is now the House of Blues, and he gave him props. Oh, God damn, he was a funny motherfucker.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's how great he was. Like, when he was blown up.
He was.
And before the Latino shit was all blown out of proportion.
He was, and then the only thing I can point to is that he had a son and I think he wouldn't mind me saying his wife was an attorney, and so it really, he was in a tough spot in that whole thing, and it was a long process, it took a toll on him, and it totally diverted his attentions. So if I can look at any one thing that, like, a guy that's like, oh my God, he's right on the cusp of something special happening. Yeah, I'm still friends with him today.
Because he was on A Living Color.
Yeah, he was. And he was actually one of the... He was on...
Friday nights at the Comedy Store every Friday night.
Oh, he was there every weekend. Yeah, and he was actually real close to getting SNL, in the early 90s or late 80s? Early 90s, probably. He was one more round to go. He just had to pass Lorne Michaels, executive producer of SNL. And, I mean, he didn't get it, but, like, he got right down to the wire. And just to get that to that, at that time, because at that time, I don't even think there's been a quote-unquote Latino on it. Well, yeah, because Sands, and then the funny dude that's, oh my goodness, I can't believe I forgot his name. He's, he's ridiculously funny.
Fred Armisen,
he's so funny. I'm glad that now that I don't think that stigma is as much there. I just saw this. I just read this whole thing, the Annenberg USC thing about film and how diversity in film, and there's only so much, and it's like you can't. Like, they had a big thing that there's only 5% of Latinos and this percent of Asians. Yeah. It's like, yo, man, we're right across from Paramount. Yo, there's only 5 studios that make movies. There's only, so many shot-collar directors. You just got to take... It's going to take time. It's just... It's unfortunate, but it's just going to take time.
Another thing, too, is, as far as Latinos are new to show business...
Bro.
But all the work that, Desi Arnaz did back in the day with I Love Lucy...
Yeah.
The camera angle and shit, and then it kind of stopped, and then now it's starting again.
Desi produced, 26 primetime shows.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, he was...
RKO Studios.
Yeah, he was... I mean, he did everything. I mean, he made up the sitcom, really. It was his whole thing. It's changing, though. My daughter's at NYU at the Tisch for film and TV. So, I mean, it's kind of... I mean, you're going to have Latinos that are going to have... that are actually really, really trained, in that. I mean, as comics, it's different for us. We have, but to be on the other side of the camera... that's what really is going to change things. You need green lighters, to do it.
Showrunners.
There's only 30 showrunners. For those of you who don't know what a showrunner is out there, what's a showrunner? To get a TV show, you cannot get a TV show without what they call a showrunner, which is usually an experienced writer, producer. TV is run by writers and movies are run by directors, like for a power play. And there really isn't. And if you are a showrunner, you have your own idea. So why would you take somebody else's idea? When a comic gets a TV show, it is a big deal because you had to get somebody on board. You had to get many layers on board to get a TV show. So it's like the lottery getting on TV. It really is. You gotta, You need to do it. And I've walked away from a lot of stuff, bro, because people will say, you must be bananas. I go, yo, I can't, man. I can't play that. And was it Rob Schneider had a show a couple years ago, right?
Yeah.
Yo, Rob dog, Schneider, they wanted me to be that cousin, dude.
I auditioned for that cousin, too.
I was like, bro.
Twice.
I was like, there's no way. And my agent's like, you know, Carl, it's really hard to get auditions. It's a trying time. And I said, why would I, do you know my act? Why would I want to be that? He goes, well, you know, this is a network show. It's already greenlit. And I said, no, I'm not going to, you know what? And I fired her right on the spot. And I said, I guarantee you, I told her, this show will not go past its 6 episodes. She goes, you must be crazy. You got Rob Schneider. And I'm like, oh, watch. And of course, because it didn't click, because you know what? It's not genuine. None of it. Dude, the girl was like from, you don't think there's some pretty Chicana they could have got as the girl? They had this European actress from Spain to play the wife. And she had a Spaniard accent. Like, what is wrong with you people?
A foreigner to play a domestic.
My goodness. It's insane.
Yeah, it's funny how you didn't want to do that. I had a callback for that role. Me and Joy Medina. When we went to audition for that role, they wanted somebody with a beard, right? And Joy Medina's 8x10 had no, he clean shaved. He borrowed He borrowed the girl in the front desk Sharpie and drew a beard on an 8x10. I swear to God, Joy Medina started drawing a beard and a mustache on his 8x10 and turned it in like that.
It's Heisenberg.
He goes, you're gonna see how desperate I am, bro. It looked horrible, man. He looked when he drew the paint. When he drew it, he looked like Carlitos way now.
Oh. The casting director. This is the kind of innovative creativeness we need. This what we're doing now is the new 8x10, a podcast. This is the new 8x10 for comics.
He got a callback. They wanted to draw a placards.
Oh. This is for his police sketch artist?
No, for real. He started drawing his face. Yeah, man, so...
You ever thought of going to Cal Arts instead of this?
That 8x10 was malicious.
That's one of the jokes. When he said that joke, I'm like, I know that joke, bro. And I was like, yo, are you 5 years old?
Hey, Willie, get the belt.
Now, we know that head trauma was something else, bro.
Did a joke, bro. How did they go?
Some bullshit about he's like Mike Tyson's at school.
Yeah,
you know,
about the spelling bee. Yeah.
Mike, do you spell malicious? Yeah. Oh, delicious?
No,
yeah.
No. Mike Tyson wrote a book.
Oh, he wrote
a kid's book?
No, Michael, Mike, you know, no, the joke goes, Mike Tyson wrote a book. Hey, man, I thought you needed to read a book to write a book.
And he's all, oh, yeah, that joke was malicious. That cookie was malicious.
Yeah,
oh,
in a sentence.
Yeah, that's what it was. Use malicious in a sentence.
Oh, that cookie was malicious. Anyway. That's all right. I don't even remember the joke. I just remember that part, dude.
And then Ernie G stole it.
Yeah, you better.
So
Ernie G, the same joke with Ernie G. Give it up for the malicious cookies.
Give it up for the malicious Latinas, bro.
Wow.
Hey, you want to hear something funny?
Wow.
I need a mic and pom-poms.
Somebody get me a velvet shirt. Dude, remember when Gabriel Iglesias had a Christmas party, and it was a third Christmas party. And by that time, we weren't working anymore. So I was like in my own world, getting all fucked up.
You were Felipe's world.
I was Felipe's world, bro. And, dude, Ernie G hit me up on the phone, and I don't know why I picked it up, but I told him, Ernie G, yeah, man, Gabriel Iglesias is having a Christmas party, man, at the Taste of Texas on the 23rd, 7 o'clock. You should be there. Dude, he shows up, and, like, nobody really invited him, but I invited him, even though I'm not going to be there. And Rudy Moreno sees him there, and it was like...
Yeah, they had that beef.
They had beef, right? But I was at home kicking back like...
Taste of Texas too.
But I was at home the whole night knowing that everybody was pissed off that he was there, and I was leaning back on my couch like Carlo, like Michael Corleone, bro.
You set it up.
Michael Corleone at the baptism.
So I was like, who invited him, Doug?
He was shaking his butt to everybody, huh?
You want to know a funny story? So I'm in New York about a year ago. Yeah. And Gabriel is doing a show at Gotham's. And I was eating at this restaurant nearby Italy, it's called. Anyway, in the Flatiron District, New York. Anyway, so I saw Gabriel was at Gotham. So I walked over there. And I think I told, who's opening for him? Oh, my goodness.
Martin?
I think Martin was opening for him. So I said, hey, I said, tell him that Ernie G's here, wants to drop in and say hi. And they go, what? He goes, just tell him. And dude, that Gabriel was like freaking out, like, what's he doing? So I go, no, I'll wait. So, and you know, Gabe was a nice guy, so he goes, yeah. So when I walked in instead of Ernie, he goes, you son, he was so like, he was tripping. He goes, I was like, what's this dude doing here in New York? So he has a big people that know Ernie, he has a big personality. He's not a bad guy by any means, but his personality is so big that it's sort of, it gets in the way of things.
I remember when I think that guy, Mercedes, I forgot it.
John Mercedes. Back in the day.
Came up with a top 50 Latino comedians.
Oh, remember how ridiculous that was?
But people wanted to be on it, eh?
Yeah.
Ernie was number 50,
and,
huh?
And no, he wasn't even on it, dude. I was number 50. He was not even on it. He was not on it.
I remember.
And he told me, bro, I gotta get on that list, bro. And he showed up to Latino Laugh Festival on his own.
In San Antonio, right?
And I said, and I started imitating Casey Kasem, moving up 10 notches.
This
Ernie
week.
G with Big Bam Bam.
That was a big, I remember that. I thought that all that was silly. I really did. I remember that Carlos Mencia was like, that he was number two on that list.
And who was one?
Paul Rodriguez, right?
I think Paul was one, and then George was three or something like that.
Joey Medina was like 11?
Yeah, something like that. And
that number was malicious.
And I was like, I go, this is silly, man. This is like, are you, I mean, although my wife thinks it sounds arrogant for me to say it's really the truth, I never went into stand-up to, like, become a stand-up. I got out of the Air Force. I studied acting at UCLA. I go, I want to be an actor. It's like, yo, it's hard to get a gig. Yo, it's like, oh, so naive. I go, you know what? My dad was really funny, man. I just do stand-up, and I'll get an agent like that. They'll come up to me. And that's really why I went into it, and it just kind of worked out. So I don't really need that validation from an audience. So I don't have that. I mean, I'm being honest, I don't have that. I only have a competitive passion to be the best that night, but on a competitive level, kind of an athletic level, not so much that whole creative. Because I think once you're funny, you're funny. Like, I'm funny. It doesn't matter whether I make myself laugh or 10,000 people laughing. It's the same thing to me. It doesn't really mean any more to me. So in this game, I see how important, like, some guys really want to be validated. You know, it's like, aren't you, there's one comic in our crew, I won't mention, but I remember he said, I got to get funny. And I go, in my head, I go, you're done. In my head, I said, you're done. Because you have to know you're a funny person. You can't get funny, bro. You can't, either you can throw 95 miles an hour or you can't. Y se acabó. That's it, you know? And so that's why, to me, when I see, I like doing shows sometimes with the young cats coming up because they have a passion for it. And mine has always been on a competitive level, just to be the best that night. I wasn't really competing against, like, just myself, you know. That's how it's always been for me. But I can't tell you, it's nice to be able to make people laugh and make a living. I always come up with stuff. I was something off the top of my head or whatever. But the true reason I got into it was just really to get into acting, to really have a sitcom. Maybe I'll do 1 hour, like I'll do that Jerry Orbach, do a Law and Order once I'm older forever or something like that. But really, I got into it just for the acting. The stand-up was nothing that was planned at all.
So you took acting classes?
Yeah, I did. I was taking acting classes at UCLA. I was non-degree seeking so that I could take just the acting classes. And then I would take, and I was like, yo, man, this is like, they would say, I didn't have my goatee or anything. So people say, well, you know what? They would say, you don't look Latino enough. You look, are you Armenian? Are you Greek? Are you Italian? And then I said, oh, well, I said, maybe I'll just do stand-up. And from there, then I just looked at, Whoopi Goldberg, I looked at Billy Crystal, Eddie Murphy, I go, well, they're stand-ups, and that's how they got, so I'll just do that, I'll just do stand-up. So I know it sounds really stupid, because that's like one of the most difficult things that people always say. But if you're really funny, like when you're naturally funny, you kind of just know it. I mean, Felipe is like, I hear, since I met him, I go, this dude's funny. And I said to myself, I go, people are going to try to bite off him, but they can't, because it's him.
The way he is, opposed to like somebody structured and put it on paper and then let you go perform.
It's not a formula. Yeah. So that's a some guys are a formula and they try really hard.
They try to fit a certain mold and put it together, because if you're funny, whatever you say on stage, you already know it's funny. That's why you say it. You know, you got to fine tune that shit. But
and there's these little nuances that's fun to play with. Like the best jokes are written on stage. Your best joke will be written. You're like, oh my god, I can't believe it. I just said that's so funny. I just said that. Like, wow, that's so funny. And you had the idea. You thought you were gonna say it this way, but you said it another way. And it was like, yo, that's mad funny, you know? And this just the way it works. Some guys, they write hours and hours, bro. It's like, they boast.
Too much, dog.
They boast how committed they are. And it's like, yo, you got a lot of recipes, but you can't cook. That's it. You know what I'm saying?
I don't understand why comedians do that, man. They take a picture of themselves
with a
picture of the diner with a crumpled up papers.
Hey, do you guys think it's kind of like that Latino dad feeling like, look how hard I work? It's like, you ain't doing shit.
No, it's the validation. It's a person that knows deep in their heart they ain't got the goods, and they're gonna try to convince themselves they got the goods. They know they don't got it. They're like that guy. They're like a fighter who's like showing, look how hard I'm training. It's like, yo, you're gonna get knocked out by this cat, bro. He's just better than you. That's it.
Tell him, Carlos Oscar.
They take pictures of themselves while they're over there dancing, bro. I'm over here grinding, eh? Nah, bro, you're avoiding your family.
I hardly ever put stuff on. Like, I'm horrible at social media. Like, my manager's like, yo, you got to do your Twitter. I'm not into it. But I do stuff on Facebook, but I always put stuff up my family. I never really promote shows or anything, because I do a lot of corporate shows. Like, you stop by at the whatever, at the Toyota thing. It can't go, you know? So it's, I can't really. And then I do a lot of shows on cruise lines too. And the reason I started doing the cruise lines, I'll tell you what. Do you remember when there was, what it called, the 2008 economic, you know, it was horrible, right? The whole economy went. And I kept on getting a lot of work, and I just like, I kept on pushing the numbers. Like, so I was like, yo, man, I got girls like in private school. I got mortgage. I got cars. I grew up so poor. Like, when you grow up with, like, you, I remember growing up where there was no food in the house. Like, literally, like, it's not, embellishing.
Not one
like
pastel.
Nothing, okay?
Not even a banana peel.
Nothing, bro. And I'd watch TV, yo, and they're like, oh, there's the commercial for Kit Kat bars, or, you know. And I'd go to the refrigerator like an idiot. There's nothing in there. Like, it's not going to magically appear. So now that I'm old, it's like, I can't let my girls ever not have, like, and even then, they don't even, I mean, my girls know they have they have nice things, but I don't even know they really appreciate. You know what I'm saying? But how can they appreciate? I mean, you know.
They grew up with
it. Appreciate it, but not like I do, because of what I grew up. So I was always like, oh, I want to make sure my girls have the best opportunity, the best education. Like, they've always gone like the top-notch schools, not just here in L.A., but the schools that my daughters have gone to are always like ranked best in the nation, because I really want them to get a great education, because especially with females, you know, it's a tough world. You want to give them the best opportunity. So that's why, I mean, it seems like it's not that I don't care about my career whatsoever. I really do. It's just that I'm never home. I'm always, so to me, it's just doing the jokes and making sure that my family, you know, gets to the next level. Even you're going to law school, right? Right where you go?
I have a year of law school, pretty much. Yeah. Stop for a year.
So my wife's going to go back to law school once our last one's out of high school. And, I mean, I told him, I said, yo, once all three of you get your degrees, like, I'm chilling. You know?
You guys are working. My feet hurt.
Carlos is going to be a trust fund dad.
Yeah, I am.
So when did you start off? You used to live with Dean Austin, Jeff?
No, I left. I lived with the... I had a place. Let me make it all clear here. It was my place. That the number on the name on that lease was Carlos Oscar.
That's okay. What's up, man.
All right, so let me make that clear.
People never say that part.
So never, huh? I was working as a physical therapist. That's what I did in the Air Force.
Massages?
No, physical therapist. Well, some involved. I mean, yeah, you know, you do whatever,
you could have been that guy,
whatever
in baseball,
modality,
bro. When they take out the picture, remember, let me check out that arm.
Yeah, huh? let me check out that arm. That was actually one of the pies that was written for me, that I was physical therapist for a baseball team. That was, anyway, so.
Sobador.
Sobador. Un curandero. Anyway, so I had this loft in the valley, and it was way too big for me, but I grew up, it's that thing of growing up poor, so I just wanted a big place for myself. And so, then I got into comedy, so then Willie moved in, then Jeff moved in, and I think Dan and Green stayed with us a couple of times, but I know Dan and Willie lived together for a short time after that. But Willie lived he lived with us for like a month, and he'd leave for like 2 weeks and back for a month, because he always had his, you know, romantic,
escapades.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, we did sit around, and we used to sit around and write jokes together, but then I did think that started to be a bad idea, because then my thing was that then nobody knows, everybody starts saying that was my joke, so I just never did it, and I stayed quiet, and they would ask why I wasn't really participating in that, because I said, no, because then it's going to be everybody starts saying that I really came up with the idea, but I came up with the punchline, so I just thought that was a bad idea.
Yeah, I used to write with people like that, and after a while, man, I just stood quiet, and if something was funny, I wouldn't say anything, just use it. For real, I would show up to write with Willie Barcena, and then Ernie G would show up, and then I started noticing that these people would show up and not with blank papers.
Not contributing?
Yeah. Not one idea, nothing, they're just writing down stuff. Then you come up with no premises.
Yeah, you just have to come up. Like, things just hit you. Like, I was when I was in New York with my daughter, you know, she's going to film school, and I think they did a thing on gravity, whatever, and I just said, you know, like, funny things just happen. You just say, I think we're drinking coffee or something. I go, yeah, did you know Sofia Vergara was supposed to get that role, not Sandra Bullock? And he goes, she was like, oh my God, what's going to happen? I'm in a space. You know, I mean, that's just a stupid idea, but it's funny.
Yeah.
You know, so I did it on stage, and people think, what am I going to do? It's just things like that happen. You'll just say something funny. So I wrote it down, and then I have little things that I always write down all the time when I. My stand-up comes with, I see something or I hear something. That's why it's not good to be on the road all the time, because you're not really living life. And then all your stories are about the road. And then that becomes a little bit of an issue, because it's like, can people really relate to you? And it's not that you have to be relatable, but like, how many freaking stories can you say?
About towels.
Yeah, like I have when I'm on the cruise ship, there's people travel, so I do like a 7-8 minute travel thing, and I always change it around, and like, and in my head, I'm like, what more can I say more than those 7 or 8 minutes? And I've, you know, and I'm in the, this, I was in a Atlanta airport. This is funny because it happened, because I was in Atlanta airport, and I'm sitting there on the tarmac, and I was flying to Europe. I was doing this cruise ship in Europe anyway. So we're sitting at 20, 30 minutes, and the lady's coming on. She goes, the flight attendant, she goes, we can't find the pilot, but I'm sure he'll be here soon. So everybody just please be patient. Anyway, so, and then she came back. We're still looking for the pilot. So then in my head, I start thinking of what she's going to say, which I put it in my act now. She comes back and goes, you know, we call the cell phone. We can't find him, and we're getting really worried. And I'm like, oh, forget it. I'm just going to get my bag. It's not going to happen. And then she comes back frantic. You know what? We're getting really worried. He might be dead. We don't understand. He could have, I mean, he's been really depressed lately. He's been drinking. He's going through divorce. No, oh, here he is. Wow. Buckle up. So, like, to me, that was like, and I said, I did it. I mean, I that little idea about being stuck on the tarmac, I made that joke up, because that's how life happens. But that's not always going to happen. So it's important for me to be home as much as possible, to be in a store, to be in traffic, to go to school with the girls to see, like, that's where jokes really happen. Where living life is where jokes happen. Because if you're on the road all the time, you know, it's, you can only watch the news so much, and you're always topical, which is okay, but, you know, doesn't work for everybody's act.
Yeah, man.
I'm always riding, bro. We're always riding,
always
bro.
Doing
take
it, bro.
A picture of me, dog.
You know?
They're over there chasing women, bro. I'm over here riding, bro.
Chasing women. You know, it's funny, that particular person you're talking about, I really don't know anything about their personal life. I mean, not that they should put stuff out there, but nothing. I'm always concerned, like, is that okay, you know? Because I know that person has children, so you always wonder, you know? I don't know. So, it's
just
me. I know,
like, nothing like that, because I remember this person who had a deal with Jay Leno, and then nothing ever happened to the deal, but Jay Leno didn't find out that he was married and had kids till 2 years later. Like, he was never honest.
Wow.
Even in a conversation.
Mm.
Like, I tell people, man, I have three kids. I don't see them, so what, you know? I'm not special. You have a brother, right? A little brother?
Yeah, I have a little stepper. You remember Raul? Yeah.
Raul. Because only one, I was driving one time.
Good looking cat.
And I was in a car with Willie Barcena. And this is, I don't want to put stuff that Willie's a bad guy, but your brother was riding his skateboarding on, I think it was on York. I don't know where it was.
Yeah, because he lived like in a...
And then he goes, hey, bro, you know who that is? That's Carlos Oscar's brother, bro. He don't give a fuck about him, man. He's over there skateboarding hungry, bro. And I'm like, bro, he's a kid, dog.
Is he in the middle of the Sahara,
this
dog?
This is funny. This is funny.
He's Doritos.
This is the funny thing that for Willie to say that. He works for UPS now.
A long time ago. You were like doing. Struggling comedians.
But he was my little half brother Raul was always with me at my house every weekend, bro. To the point where like I didn't want him to just be in the hood, you know. So I think it's just, you know, even to make that statement is really like crazy because it's like, are you out of your mind? The thing is, when you have a family. He doesn't know the dynamics of that situation because my dad and my mom divorced, and then my dad right away had three kids, and then I lived with my dad. I lived with Raul was actually he's like a stepbrother and stepsister, but I always say that they were my brother and sister. And even though the backstory to that is that my father left, like when I was in my late 20s, he left, and they didn't know where he went, and I didn't know where he went, and that's when we didn't see each other as much anymore because, like, I was like, there should have been some inkling that he was leaving town, and I could have probably talked him out of leaving. And so I've never seen my father since then.
No?
No. And I think that they really, I don't hold it against, I forgive everybody that's had, I mean, I don't forget, yo, because I'm Puerto Rican, we don't forget, but, yeah, I mean, that probably could have been staved off had they told me, but they probably wanted my father to leave, and they probably said, no, we tell Carlos, he'll probably work it out so that he stays, so they didn't do that, and so I never saw him after that. I mean, my daughters grew up never knowing their grandfather. My dad was mad funny, yo, crazy, crazy talented musician. Extremely violent, but like...
He's put in a witness protection program, bro.
He was violent, but he was also extremely a good person. Like, my dad would never steal anything or anything, but even at 5'5", 150, bro, he'd, you know...
Pack eso a punch.
Echar navaja, no, old school, bro.
Old school, the
no,
blade.
No, yeah, no punching,
no
yo.
Words, no nothing.
No, nothing, así, tú sabes. Like, I remember there was a fight, and my dad told me a good fight. This is a real story. My uncles who were in the mob, right? So we're at a pool hall in New York. This is 70s New York. This is Godfather style, right? So they're at a pool hall, and my dad was always a joker, so my dad went into the bathroom. He turned off the lights in the men's room. Some dude got mad, crazy, pissed off. Turn on the lights, and my dad was flicking the lights, just pissing the person off. He just did it as a joke. So they come out and the dude is mad crazy. Who turned off the lights? And my dad said, I didn't say nothing. I wanted to see where this is going to go. So my dad was laughing, basically thought it was a joke. And so my Uncle Fano, he said, and my Uncle Fano was into bodybuilding before anybody was into bodybuilding. He was like, you know, into it, like in the 70s. Yo, who was into that? Anyway, so he said, no, we'll fight. And the guy pulled out, my uncle wanted to fight him. And then the guy pulled out a blade, he pulled out a knife. That's very New York style, right? So my Uncle Fano, he pulls out a knife, and he said, and my uncle takes the knife, and he cuts his own forearm till it opens up and bleeds. He goes, yo soy el primero. He cuts himself. He goes, ahora tú. Like, now I'm going to cut you. And the dude freaked out. My uncle cut himself first. He goes, I'm not afraid. But he cut himself, and then went after the dude. It's like, those dudes were nuts, dude. That's why maybe, I mean, my father wasn't, that crazy, but my father was a very violent. I try not to be. That's why when I get if I'm pushed to a certain point, I can get a little, you know, but I try not to be. I mean, that's one flaw I never try to show, but it is a flaw.
unless you're asking for your check.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? My first big gig that I did was in Bakersfield. And it was, I remember it was $1,000. And they paid you in cash, right? It was back in the day. It's like $1,000. In fact, my little stepbrother Raul went with me on that one. So we're driving back, bro. We're 30 miles out of Bakersfield. I never got the money because I was so excited that I actually got this gig and it went well that I forgot to pick up the money. I had to turn around. The guy says, why? Yeah, here's your money. You left without your money. What's wrong with you? I was like, that's how much I really didn't. It wasn't about the money at that time. Now, obviously, unfortunately, you need the money. You got so much. There's so many figures you got to make, you know?
So you grew up with brothers and sisters, or did you just have Raul?
No, in my real, real family, like when it comes to me, and I mean like blood, it's my older sister who lives in Texas. And we grew up in New York. And then when we moved out to, when I was like a tweener or so, we moved out to Cali. Yeah.
Where in Texas? Austin?
My sister lives in Fort Worth, Dallas area. Yeah,
I might have met her one time.
But she lost her. I always say she lost her New York swag, because she homeschooled her four kids, and I go, yo, that's crazy, man. You because your family album's not supposed to be your yearbook. You know, have a nice summer. I'll see you every day.
have my prom in the living room.
Yeah,
class clown. Eh?
The dog is a corsage. Hey, what's up?
My dad was a janitor. Yeah.
My dad always had weird jobs, though, too. He'd always, like, he'd work, like, a place where they, he'd always do, my dad asked, by the way, this true, my dad was 2 years away from becoming a full-on doctor studying in Mexico, and he quit. And so he never, he was really, he knew, like, everything when it came to medicine. And he was a blue-collar guy after that, and he hated it, yo. He hated it because he would work these, like, weird jobs. Like, yeah, he works at, like, do you make the shoes? He goes, well, we don't make the shoes. We make the little plastic tabs on the end of the, like, these weird, weird manufacturing jobs all his life, you know? He worked at a toy shop once. He brings home toys every day, like just crazy stuff.
He was an elf.
He worked for Santa Claus.
Santa's helper.
Santa's little helper. So no, it was. But education wasn't really pushed with us. Only like we went to Catholic schools because he was afraid we'd get killed, like at the public schools. But it wasn't because he wanted us to get a better education. It was a safety factor. That was the only reason that we went to. And they were cheap back in the day, bro. Schools were cheap. Now, dude, oh my goodness, yo.
Arm and a leg, dog.
You do the math on today's private schools, especially here in Los Angeles, forget about it.
It's like a waiting list now to get into a magnet class.
Yeah, dude, if you here's the way it goes. Every school feeds into the next school. So, if you start out at the wrong school, like, your kid won't be at that so-called school. So
no.
You go to that high school, you go, where do those kids come from? This middle school. Where are those? This school. That. So you got to work your way down. So for those of you who have kids out there, work backwards so that you know which feeder school feeds into the next school. Because it's no joke. They even interview the parents. Like, oh, you know, it's not what it used to be.
Like, I know that we're trying to get our kid in a junior high. And he's barely in fifth grade, and now they start in sixth. When I was in junior high started in seventh grade.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now you go sixth through eighth.
Yeah, I don't like that, though.
Me neither, man. You're like a little kid.
You're a little kid with these big kids. It's
big
not right.
Kids who shave already.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's not, especially in today's world, those eighth graders are exposed to a lot of stuff, bro.
Eat them up.
So, yeah. Like, literally. So
we're trying to get our Isaac in King's Junior High School. Right here, King in Silver Lake, because they have like a video.
They have a good
school.
Gang.
They have a good gang.
They have a good gang. They got profit sharing.
They got profit sharing. We saw crack on a corner. They have a good drive-by shooting, man. They teach you how to aim straight. So you have to. They have to wait now. Like, you have to keep reapplying to the junior high, even though you're not old enough to go. But they see that you applied over and over.
Yeah, they got to see some consistency.
But you know, I'm going to get old school, man. I'm going to just go over there and use my friend's Ivan's mom's address.
That's how it goes, yeah.
That's how we do it, bro.
And you know what? They get tricky on that. My best friend. Yeah, that's what they do. Check this out. They want bills and they want lease agreements.
Oh.
And they want mortgage statements sometimes to make sure. Because my best friend lives in a gorgeous area, Port Ranch gated community, and he wanted his son to go to the local school there, but the way it's drawn out, his son had to go to another school, and there was no way around it. He's like, so, and my best friend is pretty well off, so he's like, maybe I'll just rent like an apartment for $800 or $900 in that, and just leave it there, but my son will get to go to that school. But at the end of the day, he didn't do it. But that's how tricky they're getting. Like a lot of people have done that, I guess. So there's a lot of, you know, when it comes to the public school systems, I think parents are more aware. They're like, "Yo, man, I'm really gonna look at the school before I just send them there." Our parents would just send
Hell
us.
No.
Just, who cares?
Por la Roosevelt, ahí van todos.
La Irving. So por la Irving, por la Kmart, which is gone now.
No, Irving's still there.
But the Kmart isn't.
The Kmart's gone. That's our second option for Ike was Irving? Irving because they have a magnet class too.
Irving was hardcore back in the day.
Hardcore.
Though, dude. Irving was like...
You went there? Did you go there?
For a minute. You know what I'm saying? But Irving was...
hardcore?
Yeah, you know who went there, I think? Remember that dude, Rico Suave?
Gerardo?
I think he went there or he went to Roosevelt in Glendale. Rico. Yeah. Rico Suave. I thought that guy was going to blow up, bro. No, I'm just kidding.
just his bandana wearing.
He actually became like an executive at A&R for like a music label.
Are you serious?
Yeah, he did. Damn. He did. So he's you know.
Still in the business.
Yeah, but you know, music business, yo, come on. That's done. That's really, when's the last time, you know, somebody bought a CD, you know? That's rough.
I think at Willie Barcena's show.
Oh, you know what? You'll check. You're like, look, this is new technology, yo. You got your
show us
fiance that. Manager. So my new special come out like next month. Like on, I have a company called Pure Comedy. So this is what I sell now. They're like a card you can subscribe to Felipe, and then you download the special.
Is this a video or just a comedy?
A video.
Or audio.
Video.
Wow!
You download it, bro.
I used to have one of these, but it was just for audio.
No, that's video.
I would give them to people, and then they would download in the back of the card.
Yeah, the key is in the back, and so
this is awesome.
Yeah, it's like for those at home, it's like a credit card with my picture on it, and then on the back, each card has an individual key in the back that you scratch off
like a,
and then you download it.
And what do you sell before?
It depends on the market.
Okay,
if I'm at a corp, I can sell for more. If it's at a, you know, cruise line, if it's here.
How about the ice sauce on Wednesday?
You can, that, you know what? I try never to sell them over what anybody else is selling their stuff for. Cause then
again, I like it.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, go ahead. So it's, I'll give you the info on it. My manager hooked that up. Bro, it's amazing.
When you put it out?
It doesn't come out till like next month. Here's the problem with that.
This is cool, man.
That's bad, dude.
Yeah, I shot it.
Boom.
This year,
no
DVD, no nada.
You just signed the card.
I signed the card. Exactly, bro. I did a big show, a corporate, and I signed a bunch of people by. And I said, yo, I was very clear to them. I said, you cannot download it until December. And they said, no, we're still going to buy it. And they bought it. I was like, really? So anyway, I shot this special because I wanted to start like retiring a lot of my staying up and because my daughters are getting older and there's a lot of new thing. My wife and I are going to be kind of empty nesters, you know, so it's like a whole different experience now and everything, even like I talk about getting older, like I try to stay in the best shape I can, but I know a lot, like I studied a lot of nutrition and this and that. So I know quite a bit that's a good, so I got a lot of stuff to talk about. So I did that special. And like I'm never satisfied with any like I first of all we did it in a nice theater in Colorado, but I probably would have liked to have done it just at the Ice House, but I may shoot something there too because the feel at a theater, I don't know, it's not as intimate, you know. And so I shot it. I think I did like 90 minutes, and they're cutting it right now. They're editing. They don't have to edit too much, I think, but. I've only done like five or seriously, in my 20-year stand-up career, there's only five or six sets where it was a 1-minute set or a 90-minute set that I really thought, okay, that went okay. Only like five or six. I've never been satisfied with like anything. So I'm like, it's bananas. I couldn't see myself. I couldn't even see the project. I said, you know what? Just make sure the beginning is smooth, the end is smooth, and that's it. I can't watch myself. So people can enjoy it, but not me.
Did you do this all your? Excuse me. Did you do this all yourself? You produced it. You paid for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you know what? I can't
DIY.
I can't wait like for other. Look, here's how it goes. For those of you who are starting out in stand-up...
How come you didn't do it for Showtime, man?
You know, I know there's one. And no disrespect, but I think Nuvo is doing stuff. But I didn't want to get caught up in that. It's a Latino thing, project.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to get caught up in that. That's the only reason I didn't really... It has nothing to do with... I'm sure that it probably shot beautifully.
Right.
But I can't get... I don't want to get caught up in that. And maybe I'll rethink. Maybe what I'm saying is wrong. But I just think that era's gone. I think that era of really pushing ethnicity is kind of like, you know. I think it should be more organic. It's like, you know, if you're... I look at it like sports, man. If you're a great baseball player, you're going to make it to the major leagues, whatever color you are. It should be that way in Hollywood.
Yeah.
But obviously... It's a more subjective feel than objective feel. So obviously we're not going to get that perfect world. But I'm to the point now where, okay, I can accept it. Like, there's been, like, I'm going to shout out names. I don't care. It's like, I don't care. I was like in cahoots for a really good opportunity to get a TV show several years ago with a great producer, but I needed a showrunner. What did we talk about? The showrunner. I couldn't find any showrunner. They were really like, you know, they're doing their own thing and blah, blah. Anyway, so they got this cat. He's a nice cat. I mean, he's been in the game a long time. Peter Marietta, right? He writes, he's written all like he's most of his fame has been for like the kids shows.
Yeah.
But like, you know, we didn't connect because he's the so-called go-to Latino writer, but he's really half Latino. And although he might play that card, to me it didn't connect. Because when I talked to him, like, you and me can go back and forth, do a little Spanglish. And you know what I'm saying? This cat's like, I don't see it. And that's why I think he's used to writing in that sophomoric medium of kids structure, because everything he's done prime time has never really worked, because even though it's gotten on the air, like there was a show last year, We Are Family or the family something like that, and it had one Latino family, the guy was like a boxer or whatever. That show was so stupid. You see that? NBC.
I remember it.
NBC only has six episodes. Welcome to the Family.
I just seen the little advertisement for, and it was 3 weeks, and then after that it died.
And it was okay, so it was like a white family and a Latino family that kind of mixed.
Their
kids are 18.
Oh, I read for that. The exactly. Kid finds out his
graduation day.
At the graduation day. And I was telling Lisa why they can't do a show without the kid being pregnant.
Exactly. Okay, mira.
Can he just graduate?
So look, so of course.
Empty nester show. Yeah.
It was Peter was part of that. And again, he wrote Sons of Two. He wrote everything he writes is just. Look, he's a professional writer. He's got a great career. But when it comes to selling that Latinoism, I don't really buy it as authentic. And we're not as galvanized as the black market. You cannot do that. You got to do something that's just funny that also happens to have Latinos. Once you push that envelope that you try to put this Latino edge, and then it was so wrong. My daughter saw that show. And she was, like, disgusted, yo, because, first of all, he's 18. Day of graduation, he finds out he's pregnant. And then he's, like, a valedictorian, very smart kid. And he got admitted into USC. But now he can't go to UC. What do you mean now he can't go to – that he's going to go to a junior – no, you can't. If you know the college process, you can't just pull out of USC and go to a smaller school, right? Or UCLA, whatever it was. You cannot do that. You can't go into another smaller four-year university. This is your graduating day. It's May. Sacabó. You're done for the year.
You're ready to go.
You want to go to a JC? Do that.
That's weird. That's true, though.
Exactly. So
like,
now
now, other Southern, he has to go to the Alley
yeah,
Skill Center.
Why, you know? But you're going to love this part. It's his graduation day. And the party at the Mexican kid's house, there's a piñata. When the hell do you see a piñata for a graduation party?
When you're six.
Stupid, man.
Or another one, too, man, that I always see, like, there's a Latino party, and out of nowhere, five flamenco guitar players.
Yeah. It was funny because...
Just like the Iberian Peninsula, though.
No, all that is...
That's like having a Chinese party, and all of a sudden there's a dragon with fireworks.
Samurais and shit.
Look, you're good. That's why they push... They push it to... So when I see these shows, they're not authentic. They're not authentic, and then they wonder why. And, hey, this is great. This guy's had this long-standing career. He's the go-to guy, and I'm sure he's great at structure and whatnot, but, you know, that's not good. You need... Look, I know it's a tall order, but you got to have a Seinfeld kind of show if you really want to cross over Latinos into this new genre. It's got to be such a great show that people go, like the show Black-ish, that's a great show. And it doesn't, I know that the title, some people don't understand the title, but the title is that they're Black-ish, not Black, because their kids don't understand color anymore. They're like a new generation. They don't get it. Like Anthony Anderson was on a show, and they said that it inspired him to do this show because his son, who is now growing up in a nice house, and Anthony Anderson grew up in a really tough neighborhood in South Central, he says, and that he told his son, hey, who's that white boy you're with? And his son said, who? Well, he goes, why you gotta call him white boy? He's just my friend. So he saw, like, yo, this generation of kids, they don't see that the same. And that's why that show is so funny. That show is entrenched in it being funny. Yes, it's got its street cred vibe. It has what would be quote-unquote maybe some Black experience. But the overall experience of Black-ish is a funny show. It's just a funny show.
I know, like I know that Black-ish wouldn't do a scene where Lauren Fishburne is putting rooster red hot sauce on everything.
Yeah, exactly.
For real, because if it was a Latino show, it'll be like a guy showing up with tapatio all the time. Come on, man, it needs tapatio.
Yeah.
Give him some spice.
Oh, yeah, and they don't understand. And like
they just don't. It's because I think the whole perception is that we all, like, you know, like you said, galvanize the same thing. But dude,
we're all different. We're not like you know, it's almost like the Asian community, Koreans, Chinese, Japanese are very different. Filipinos. When it comes to the Black community, the atrocities that happened to African Americans in this country, we don't have that common bond. We don't have that. That's why Black people are extremely galvanized from the history and to this day. And it's a different, what we can take is the strengths from what they've overcome. And that would be, let's just try to be good. That's why a show like Black-ish, that's why Bill Cosby, that's why, you know, music, authentic to your musical roots. Now look at hip hop. You got Iggy, who's the hottest star, and it's a white girl who loves hip hop. That's awesome. That's awesome. I don't like it when Black people get mad that she talks Black. Like, yo, man, this is hip hop. Hip hop came from the Bronx. If you're in the Bronx, bro, Puerto Ricans use the N-word, and no Black people get offended because we're in the same hood. So,
give us some.
Yeah. Case in point.
You're right, though. You're right.
Yeah.
You're
yeah. Right. Yeah, because it's a different vibe. So,
hey, Bobby Bites, I can't believe this nigga here.
You gotta try to find that episode with his puffy eye.
I'm gonna look for it, dog.
Look for it, bro. I think he's got like a yellow shirt or something. And you know what's funny? What's her name? She's a comic from Houston.
Sheila Rivera?
No, Black comic from Houston. She's really funny, man. She had her own show on ABC back in the day, man.
Thea Vidal.
Thea Vidal said. Thea Vidal saw me at a shoot that we did after that. He goes, what happened? You had a fight with him? I go, yeah. He goes, he said he got you good. He goes, but I said, man, he got his eye all puffy and stuff. What do you mean you got him good?
So it was, baby.
Yeah, so it was fun. You know, it's funny. We did a taping with her at Comedy Central, and we're all doing like, I think 10 minutes. 10 minutes was like the max. And she did 20 or 30 minutes, bro, but she went off. Like, it was different because it was her set, and they were gonna have like a DVD version, so it was cool. So, dude, she went. She's crazy, that lady, man. I don't know if she lives in LA anymore. I think she lives back in Houston, isn't she?
I don't know. I've seen her here.
Very funny though. Very funny, crazy funny, man. It's crazy, but you know, I want to get this out there clear because a lot of people think that. I know my act is like I don't use any profanity in my act or anything like that, but I don't have any zero problem with anybody using that on a show I'm doing, and everybody always thinks that.
Never,
because
bro.
Yo, people think people
used to be a Wild Coyotes, bro.
Yeah,
like, I remember like, people. The show would be filthy, dirty, and then you go up there, man, and get on that stool like a soldier, like for real, like you. Nothing bothered you. You went up there smooth, and not a lot of people could say that they went up there and did what you did at Wild Coyote after the funny guy killed it with all these killers.
Yeah, I was always like, I remember I was doing a show at a major club in it was at actually Hermosa Comedy Magic, great club. That Mike Lacy is like the best owner of a club anyway. So, well, Bob Fisher too. Those guys are two great clubs. So. Yeah, he's Jamie's a person that's hard to. I'll give you a bit on Jamie. So I was at the Hermosa, and this a name comic, high profile comic, came up. He goes, "Hey," and I got in the green room, and he put his head down. He went like that, like damn. And I go, "What is that all about?" He goes, and I go, and you know, being myself, yo, what? Like I got a little defensive. Yo, what's up? Like all of a sudden, I switch gears, and he goes, "No, let me tell you something." He pulled me aside. He goes, "No, you don't understand, bro. When you come in here, man, and." You know, you do your set, and you have like a great spot that it makes me think like, oh man, I can't go on stage, and I start thinking about what I'm saying. I shouldn't say this, I shouldn't say that. So he said that me doing a clean set would get in his head because then he felt bad. Dude, I said, why? He goes, I don't know. He goes, not just me, dude, other comics, because then people come up after the show and say, hey, how come you had to say this? That other comic didn't say it. So I've gotten that. I thought that was actually a cool in a kind of a roundabout. A compliment in a
like
sense.
Props.
Yeah. But it wasn't anything negative. It was something that it was just he said.
Somebody told me that. How can you be clean like Carlos Oscar? Cause bro, somebody touched my penis when I was little.
It was over. The palatero ruined
shit,
it.
I was molested.
That palatero ruined it.
By the corn man, bro. I can't just go up there and be clean. I'm still bitter.
The corn man.
I wanted mayonnaise.
Yo dije mayonesa. He took another direction with it.
Not that kind of man. Fucked around and got the wrong lotion, dog.
Oh, you know what? I think we should. I don't know how much time we have, but I want to make sure that. There is like a, I mean, it's just, yeah, there's like a divisiveness, though, amongst the Latino comics as they came up. Like, really, they really were. I thought we had a really, I mean, I'm tight with Rudy and Gilbert, Johnny Sanchez. I haven't seen Johnny in a long time, but I haven't seen anybody in a long time. I was out, but I thought the division started, he's funny because.
When you got fame, Carlos.
When Felipe mentioned that culture clash, this is, okay. When
you were hot, dog.
Keep it in real.
I didn't know you personally, but I knew that you were hot because everybody was talking about you.
Okay, so this is what happened. So
muy chingón.
I did culture clash. It was like my second set doing it anyway. So they had me get there at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I didn't go on till 11 p.m.
Damn.
And I did the wrong thing.
Was there BT Comic View?
No. So I didn't drink. I didn't drink enough water. I didn't, you know, my sugar levels were, I just, you know, and at that time you're still overthinking, you know, because you're going on TV. So I get on stage, yo, and I'm like 2 minutes into my act and I blank out, yo. Blank. Se acabó. I can't remember my name. And I said to the audience, I said, "Oh, cut." I go, "Let's take it from the top." And I told the audience, "Yo, you're going to have to be the star, so pretend you didn't hear the first 2 minutes." But that's from my acting thing. That's where I came from. I went on. We started from the top. Boom. Knocked it out. It was awesome. And then after that, all the comics, "How could you have the audacity to stop a show? Who do you think you are?" I'm like, "Well, are you crazy?" I said, it's taped. It's not live. It's not, I go, it's, I'm the one that's going to air, so why not make it good? And all the dudes from Culture Clash said, yo, why don't other comics do that? They come out here, they start flubbing, and then they just keep on going. He goes, that was good. We started from the top, and it was fresh, you know?
They must have brought their own tape.
You know?
so.
But that's smart. That's Dude. Very smart. For all you young comics, if you're listening right now, Carlos Oscar just gave you the best advice ever. When you're doing a comedy special, Comedy Central special, 5 minute set for Laugh Out Loud or whatever taping, if you mumble, start all over.
Start. Who cares?
Who cares?
It's your set, and the audience will be 100% behind you.
Who cares about what, if they're going to do extra tape? One thing that happened on Last Comic Standing, I won't say his name. He was performing on stage. You know, this is a competition. There was a playoff game going down in the back of the theater. The crew, the grip, they're watching the Laker game. And the Lakers has just scored. So there was a reaction from Kobe scoring outside that went all the way into the audience. So, Lakers scored. So by the time he gets to the joke, he paused. And it messed with him. He was up there like an open mic all of a sudden, man. Oh. Last Comic Standing. So he was like,
he got stunned.
What happened? And then he didn't jump back, bro. Oh. He didn't recover from that. And of course, the next taping of him by himself, that look he had, and I'm watching going, cry.
Yeah.
Cry.
No, you gotta be, look, I'll tell you what. I was doing a show on a cruise liner when Felipe was on Last Comic Standing, right? And, So I told my wife, because I can't see it. I don't have, like, you know what I'm saying? So she told me, and I was, like, so freaking happy. And then the year after that, the cruise line that I do is mostly I have a kind of exclusive with, it's a Princess Cruise Lines, right? So they had an entertainer of the year, like, a couple months after Felipe. They did a Facebook thing, and they had, but I was all acts. It was, like, magicians and bands and whatever. So, like, 3,000 acts, whatever. So they picked five, so I was one of the five. And so I had my family. I'm such a competitive head, yo. I said, I can figure this out. So I would mess with the other dudes, like the Beatle. They were like a Beatlemania. They were like a Beatle thing. They were competing, and they were interviewing us on the ship for news and whatever. And they were like all over because they had a big production. This Beatle, they did a huge production. And I'm just gonna be sitting on a stool, right? So when they talked to them, and then when they came to me, I made sure that they were an earshot from hearing me. And I said, "Yeah, well, you know, I'm gonna be up there doing, you know, I go, the difference between me and some of the other performers, like, well, I'm doing my own stuff. It's not like I'm doing Bill Cosby's jokes. Or I'm doing, you know. So I had to make sure to get them. So I wanted to get in their head. And then I saw, I went to their act, just. Pure competitiveness. I saw their act and I saw how they pimped the crowd. Like, they got the crowd to stand up and clap, and then they go, good night, and they left. So they were, that's a false standing O. So I said, okay, I see what they're doing. So they when I saw that, I go, I got this in the bag. I ripped it, and I did different shows. I did like three different 45-minute sets, but I did three different 45 sets. So I had people coming back to the show. So the last night, the end of the joke, I said, I'm about to close this out. I was ripping. I'm put the cherry on top. So I brought my daughter up on stage for the last joke, and she's beautiful. She was little. Boom, dude. And then I won the whole thing. But I did it really from, like, you have to be, like Felipe says, you got it. When you're in a competition, you got to play that sight game, too. You can't just rely on being funny. You got to make sure that the other cats feel it, you know?
Like, when I was on Last Comic Standing, I knew, like, by the third time I was with this audience, they already knew me. Like, I was building fans with the audience. So I would go up, and I would get a standing ovation going up, but I was doing it myself.
Yeah.
I was psyching them out. I would put my hand up like this, and they would rise.
Uh-huh.
Then I would just tell them to sit down.
Yeah.
But then I would do my set. That's what Natasha LaGuerra said. Did you bring your whole family here? No, man. It's called winning the audience over.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna tell her that.
I went to go see my wife. She took me. I mean, I'm into hip hop, but she years ago. We went to go see Juan Gabriel. This is like
Noah.
So what that dude knows how to pimp a crowd, bro. So when you see his performance, you go, this guy knows like how to work a crowd. And I really learned a lot from watching Juan Gabriel. He knows how to win a crowd over, bro. Just endearing. And you can learn a lot, not even from people that do you specifically what you do. Any entertainer, you can learn something from. The worst thing is when the comics go up there and they, like you said, they something that they know didn't go right, they acknowledge it. Don't. Just keep on going. Just keep on going, man. You know, like you're missing a note on a band, right? They say if you miss a note, don't stop. Just keep on playing.
Keep playing it, man.
That's what this fool's always said. Just keep talking, dog.
Just keep talking, bro. They don't know what you're doing up there.
Yo, they're freezing and shit.
So what you got going up next, Carlos Oscar? Any more awards you're going to steal? Because you won the Cruisership Award twice, not just one time, right?
No, I won it. There was the first time ever that they did it, so I'll always be the first dude that did it, so that's a good thing. But they didn't let me go back, and the other entertainers said it's not fair for me to be able to go back.
You're going to punch them out.
Yeah. So, yeah. No,
they don't like cherries, dog.
So anyway, I'm booked through like next year already, but I'm trying to lay off from being away so long. So I'm trying to do more corporates. I mean, I'm in town this weekend, so I'll do a small show.
You should start your own podcast, bro. You should, when you're ready, man, have it all things comedy, and just invite people over, man.
I should, because it'd be fun. And I actually like to go, you know, into New York, too, and do some stuff out of New York, because my daughter's heavily involved in the sketch comedy and whatnot in New York now. So
that's funny that your daughter's at NYU, and I know her since she was a little girl.
Yeah.
And that makes me feel good, because you said that, you know, we need Latinos to be involved, not just in the acting part. We have too many of those. We need people behind.
Yeah.
We have too many. We need people to behind the scenes, people with money, people actually paying for shows.
Yeah.
Because I remember the biggest complaint was when Paul Rodriguez and George Lopez, from other comedians that I hung out with, because I only hung out with comedians that were sad. But you were happy, so you were not in my level. Hey, bro, that guy, he doesn't do nothing for La Raza, bro. A lot of actors, a lot of comedians, they feel so self-righteous, bro. Like, they have a welfare mentality. How, Rodrigo? Like, you're supposed to help them out. It's tough out there, man. Once you're in, you're trying to stay in.
You're trying to float. But you can't do, I think, what Mr. Lopez did, which was extremely make sure that other Latino comics couldn't even audition for his show. Not that I would want to be on it, I would never, but I thought that was a little bit, when you go out of your way to trip somebody, that's going out of the box, you know? I mean, and they did, because he didn't want anybody that was, you know, he's very insecure, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, he knows who he is, you know? And one thing I always tell people is like, yo, he's a, you know, he made it really big, but he didn't change. He was always very distant with people, I think. So I don't think he changed with fame. He's always been he's very competitive, you know, but I don't see that he owes anybody anything. That's for sure.
Nothing.
Nobody owes anybody anything, but you can't trip somebody up if they're coming up that ladder either. You know, if you're going out of your way to do that, you know, I don't know about that either. So,
yeah, man.
Yeah.
Because him and I were talking, like, I actually got to talk to him and know him, not personally, but Paul Rodriguez, too. Mm-hmm. I got in with Paul Rodriguez. Actually, when I talked to George Lopez last year, we were working on a show for me. He actually found me a showrunner.
Oh,
but
well,
that guy was he was a showrunner for Warehouse 101. But Mexicans and Warehouse, so we worked together. Yeah, that was funny thing about George, like when he had his own show. Did you ever do the show, Lopez Tonight?
No. But I didn't. I'm telling you, I'm goofy that way. I really didn't want to. I didn't.
Step
I, had,
on toes.
I had some disdain for him because I knew the way he. I remember he used to talk so much.
You're part of his era then.
No, he was already very established before I got there. Because the very first time I met George Lopez, it wasn't a good experience. So
you're the guy who punched Mike Robles, huh?
So, you know.
The guy that I'm hosting for.
So, you know, that was, yeah. So, no, it was actually way before that. Before I put like 6 months in a stand-up.
I'll start watching a baseball game.
But he was, you know what? I played in that celebrity game once, and he was soon at Dodger Stadium.
At the Hollywood All-Star game.
Yeah. I just think that opportunity, he was real smart about it. When he got that show on ABC, my goodness, he was smart about it, bro, because he got all as much organizations to keep that show going, because, you know, I study like television numbers, and his numbers weren't great, but he got them to move him to a Friday night, and Friday night's like cush spot, bro. Once you're on Friday, you don't need to get big numbers. And that show has been a commodity in syndication. So,
Cristela is on Friday.
Yeah, that's why she doesn't really need big numbers. She can just
float
there, bro.
Then at the other show, Selfie got canceled.
Yeah, Selfie, because that was a Tuesday night. That's rough. That's rough waters.
Just so, a Tuesday. What are you thinking? Thursday. Like the
big
shot.
If you're a Thursday
Friends,
night show.
Seinfeld, cheer,
yeah, if you're a Thursday
taxi.
Night show, means that's your day. I mean, Wednesday night's good. Like, you know, like for ABC, Wednesday night would be a good spot. But the NBC made Thursday their spot. You know, I think CBS is trying to do a little bit of that by moving over the last year of Two and a Half Men and trying to establish McCarthy's there and whatnot. But, Friday night's probably the best night to not have that pressure.
Yeah, like Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah.
No, Malcolm and Eddie was on Friday.
Yeah.
So was Homeboys in Space.
Yeah, well, those were like syndicated. Wasn't that KCOP? Well, whatever that was.
WCW
or the other one? I don't know. I think it was UPN. It was UPN.
Yeah, I remember off the day where Chris Rock had his show. He had a funny joke, man. He said that the Cleveland Cavaliers and the New York or the Brooklyn Nets were gonna he said the Calvin Cavaliers and the New Jersey Nets were gonna swap players, and he said, how is that gonna help any team? That's like swapping the cast of Malcolm and Eddie and Homeboys in Space. So anyway, what you got? You want to tell our show, our guest?
Oh, New Year's.
Where can they find you at?
New Year's. CarlosOscar.com. Pure Comedy. PureComedy.com. And then I'm gonna do a big New Year's Eve show probably in Chino at like kind of like a family friendly. It'll be in Chino. It'll be advertised. I think I just got the deal yesterday. So I was gonna go out of town, but I'm gonna stay in town for New Year's Eve. So if anybody in that Chino area there, it'll be advertised. You guys will know about. I'll put it on my Facebook and stuff. But I'll try to Twitter, but I don't. I suck at that. Anyway, I'll try to get better at it.
Just do it, bro. You write funny stuff. You know, speaking of New Year's Eve, I did an all-family New Year's Eve show one time. I think Gilbert Escobar hooked it up. I did Victory Outreach.
Oh, I've done a lot of those,
and,
yo. You got a problem? You got a problem with Jesus or what, eh?
Cholo's on megaphones.
Oh, it was a sad New Year's Eve show because everybody was doing testimonies and there was a lot of families there. This girl cried. I remember my mom when she was selling the diaper money for us. And then I'm next, man.
How can you follow that?
How can you follow that? Wow, man. I don't know if this was about Jesus or a horrible rose for you, lady.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody said nothing good about you.
A roast. An asada. That's Victor Armitage.
You're always
asadas.
Funny, man. To me, you've always been a funny guy off stage. Like, you say one funny stuff about somebody and it just lasts forever. Like, I remember we did a show one time in San Jose and there were a lot of Mayan dancers.
Oh,
like,
yeah, yeah.
No,
it was in Chicago, at Northwest University.
Northwest University.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There were Azteca dancers.
There were Azteca dancers. This would be Puerto Rico. Give it up for the Masola dance.
No, I go. I said, is it Azteca or Manteca? Because they were fat. So that's what I said. Is it Azteca or Manteca?
I'm going to use that one, bro.
The guy should be singing Masola.
It was a fun day. I remember that gig because we got lost, I think, going to that show. I remember that night. It was me, you, and Gabriel. Yes, Gabriel. Yeah. Next time I come on, I have a great story about me, you, and Gabriel going up to do a show up north, and on the way back down, we were already far, and these cats turned around like 30 miles go back to get this chili fries or something.
Oh, and
I'll let you know next time.
What's up, fool? Carlos Oscar, we're gonna have you back, bro, as a co-host or something. No, bro, you're still here.
Respect. Respect.
Respect. Oh, man. I love it how you close out the show with a little knock it off the park all the time.
The baseball swing, yeah.
The baseball swing. I remember, bro, on Que Loco, you did that. And then Larry Omaha said, watch this. And he was standing next to you. Instead of doing the baseball bat, he was doing a poo stick.
Well, the day I told my wife, I go, the day I swing from the left side, because I actually hit left-handed, I don't hit right-handed. So when I swing from the left side, that'll be the last set. That's when I retire. I'm going to swing from the left side. Se acabó.
Hell yeah. Switch hitter, baby. So, man, you're a Yankee fan, man.
Hardcore. We'll see what happens. Right, but man. I like the Dodgers, too. Yo, I loved Fernando and Garvey and Say and Baker. I mean, those are the cats
Russell
I grew up,
you know.
But that 10 years together in infield. When it comes to baseball, bro, I could go on forever. So we're going to be here all night if we talk baseball.
Hell yeah, man.
So, Rodrigo, what you got going up next?
Chilling, man. Just fucking chilling. We're going to take off tomorrow, dude.
Yeah,
in the day with.
Where are you guys going? Oh, you going on?
Oh, Central California next week. This Friday, we'll be at Holtzville Barbara Worth Resort. It's sold out already. Yeah.
It's sold out. I like when comics put, come see Latino night, sold out, inbox me for free tickets. What does that mean?
Suddenly you got deal chills.
Yeah. Sold out. Inbox me for free tickets.
Gave me laugh bumps.
Oh, man. Last Refresh show was sold out, man. We gave away too many tickets. Guest list, call me.
Yeah.
All right, people. Carlos Oscar, thank you very much, man. You're a legend,
we'll
dog.
See you next time, man.
You're a living legend, bro. You're the last of the Mohicans.
The last of the Mohicans, right?